I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 17th of September. How about these fascinating ideas, which would not need a constitutional amendment, but a mere majority of Congress? Take a look at Section 2, Article 1 of the Constitution, giving us the right to have one member of Congress for every 30,000 constituents in each state. In 1912, Congress passed a public law freezing the number at 435, but if we did have a member of Congress for every 30,000 constituents, we'd have about 10,000 members today. That would change things. Also, look at another part of the Constitution, Article 2, Section 1. We can have an unlimited number of justices on the Supreme Court. In 1869, Congress set the court at its current number of 9. Why not more? Christopher Phillips is our guest this hour, a foremost specialist in the Socratic method. We spoke with him last a couple years ago after his book, Constitution Cafe, Jefferson's Brew for a True Revolution, was released. He's a senior education fellow at the National Constitution Center, where he regularly convenes Constitution Cafe give and takes. He's an ethics fellow at Harvard, where he discusses First Amendment issues with law enforcement officers. And he says he continues to gallivant across the fruited plain, offering offbeat mini-constitutional conventions with motley groups of Americans. He believes we ought to ask questions not about any chance question, but about the way that we live. He's the recipient of the Distinguished American Leadership Award, believes that the process of dialogue and the space of human interaction are good for us as individuals and essential for us as a society. So the question's for you. Should Congress vote to give us more members of Congress, one for every 30,000 constituents or something like that? And do you think we should have more justices on the Supreme Court? I think we'll have a rip-rousing great conversation on these issues, and you're welcome to join us at 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we are on Twitter at K Dunn Show. Christopher, what a pleasure to speak with you again. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good.
It's a pleasure to be back.
Oh, it's great to have you here. And you come up with these wonderful ideas that people just haven't thought about very much.
Well, you know, I hadn't thought about it much either until I really started immersing myself in the Constitution. You know, most of us haven't read it or don't read it regularly.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it just takes some careful thought. It was very accessibly written. There's some marvelous movements right now to hold a new constitutional convention,
and I
admire them. But first, I think we need to read our existing document and ask ourselves, does it already give us the mechanisms to bring about the change we need?
And what's interesting in both of these areas, it would take just a mere majority of a congressional vote, right?
A mere majority. I mean, we haven't had a constitutional amendment enacted in ages. The last one, the 27th Amendment, and that was actually an amendment that made it through Congress in the 18th century, and that was finally enacted well over 20 years ago. So there's not much chance that we're going to get something enacted as an amendment. But the other side of the coin is we don't need to. We certainly need to maybe threaten to have another amendment convention if that's what it takes to get Congress to do the people's bidding. But our visionary framers gave us the means to make our constitutional republic one of a decidedly democratic variety, and we just have to insist that they do so.
And in addition to looking at the Constitution, you've already looked at the history of why things are the way they are. And the history of why we only have 435 members of Congress is not a good one. It's not a flattering history.
It is not. And it's a history most of us, including me, was not aware of until I began sort of putting my microscope into the Constitution that did some historical sleuthing. What happened was in 1910, after the new census came out, is that members of Congress who were called nativists saw that most of the immigrants coming were, you know, living in urban centers, and that if they kept increasing the number of members of Congress as the population increased, as had been done throughout our history, then urban areas would have undue influence. And so they were alarmed, and they convinced a majority of members to pass this law called innocuously called Public Law 62-5 that froze the number of members at 435, and it's basically remained at that number ever since. My argument is that it has frozen our republic. It has kept now every member of Congress has sort of a fiefdom. Each member represents about 700,000 constituents.
Wow.
And you can't even know the will of the people, much less act on it with that many. We weren't meant to have that kind of a constitutional republic.
Wouldn't it shake things up if we had one for every 30,000 now? Oh, my goodness.
Well, you know, let's say that that's considered just too unwieldy for right now.
10,000 is a lot.
It's a lot. And yet, the Greeks of old, they would just corral the first 5,000 people and gather in a stadium and do the people's business.
Right.
So they could do it. And,
right.
and imagine in these high-tech times how easy it would be to do it. Congress probably wouldn't even, members wouldn't even need to come into Washington, D.C. They could just communicate, maybe even better. They don't communicate in the halls of Congress very well, through Internet and face-to-face interactions through the Internet. So it would so for all those who are clamoring for decentralization of Congress, this would certainly fit the bill for them.
Mm-hmm. It would also open up the doors to a wide variety of people, wouldn't it?
It would be so wonderfully colorful.
Oh, yeah.
It would be cacophonous. There would either be lots and lots of political parties, or maybe it would do away with political parties altogether. But it would certainly do away with the hold that these two rather cookie-cutter political parties have because they're so beholden to the corporate coffers. It would shake things up in the best sense. Our framers had never even envisioned that we'd have political parties in the first place. And so having so many members of Congress would basically dilute the influence of lobbyists. It would be very hard for lobbyists to influence so many members of Congress. It would be a game changer, and I think it would be a democracy changer, too.
And what kind of number do you think, Christopher, would be manageable? 10,000 might be way too many.
We'd probably have to do it incrementally just because 100 years have passed and we've kept the number frozen. In my Constitution Cafe dialogues with people, I'm surprised at how many think that the Constitution itself mandates that we only have 435 members.
Right.
If we had simply never enacted that law, we would have about 1,500 members of Congress right now. And so it would never have been a big deal in the first place. And that would have been, 1,500 would be much more representative. It would give us genuine what I would call representativeness, even if we had just kept incrementally increasing it. Now, let's say that we did go all out and have 10,000. Well, let's look at all of our congressional districts. We have 435 members of Congress. Each has about 22 unpaid staffers unelected staffers. So these are people who are not elected by the people. Let's say that we eliminate all these unelected staffers. Well, 435 by 22 basically adds up to about 10,000. If there was one member of Congress per 30,000 constituents, they wouldn't need an army of staffers. They could basically maybe just have one staff member and be much more effective in heeding the will of their constituents, wouldn't have to worry about starting to raise funds for their next campaign as soon as they were elected into office. And it would also make it possible for virtually anyone to throw his or her hat in the ring and run a viable campaign for office. It's so possible to do this, but we would have to insist that our members of Congress stand up and take a vote on it.
Mm-hmm. You say that it would render obsolete gerrymandering of congressional districts. Why would that be an outcome?
Well, I think if you have just one member of Congress for every 30,000 constituents, you're going to have some pockets that are necessarily very conservative, some very progressive, and some maybe anarchist, some secessionist, many kinds.
Right.
And they would sort of do what James Madison, the steerer and father of the Constitutional Convention, had in mind. All these various factions would sort of cancel themselves out. None would have unwieldy power over the others. So it would just by having such intimate congressional districts, there would be and to have so many, there would just be no need to kind of make these really rather schizophrenically organized congressional districts that we have now, in which, you know, whichever political party in any given state has the power, they carve out districts that are to their advantage.
Mm-hmm. And it would make it difficult, at least in the representative branch, you write, for lobbyists to wield much influence on behalf of their corporate clients. There would just be too many.
It would change everything. I mean, K Street would either just go away or become John Q. Public Street. I mean, grassroots lobbyists have a far more onerous hoops to go through to get members of Congress to listen, to bend their ear towards them than do paid lobbyists. It's not to say that it would eliminate lobbyists altogether, but I think would dramatically transform what they do and how they go about doing it. But most of all, I think it would be almost impossible for members of Congress not to reflect the people who are in their constituency.
Well, what about the Senate, though? The Senate is the body that truly doesn't represent the whole of the United States, does it?
It does not. In fact, but, you know, that's the one thing in the Constitution that's pretty sacrosanct. It says that that's one thing that cannot be amended. We can never amend our existing Constitution to change the way that the Senate is comprised, that there's always going to be two senators per state, no matter how small or large. With my two proposals, with dramatically increasing the members of Congress, and then also, you know, my proposed change for the Supreme Court, I think it would sort of offset any undue influence that people might fear that, you know, that individual states would have. The other thing is there is no perfect system. What I'm arguing is that this would make us our system far more representative in the way that our framers had in mind.
Mm-hmm. And let's look at the second idea here. This is also interesting. I didn't know this. In 1869, Congress set the court at its current number, and it has remained at 9 ever since. I guess FDR tried to change that and give us the background of that. But it is a weird number, isn't it?
It's a weird number that, once again, based on the hundreds of Constitution Cafe dialogues I've held hither and yon, that most people take for granted was etched in our Constitution.
Right.
They think that it's said that we have to have 9 members. We'd have 1,000. We can have 2. The thing is, since history shows that our Supreme Court, whether we agree with their rulings or not, quite actively legislate from the bench, whether they call themselves originalists or constructionists or anything, but I think it's better than to have a bigger court that's more reflective and more pluralistic in perspective as the people as a whole. When it's reduced to just 9 at a time when our to represent what, over 300 million Americans, it's almost archaic. And so I do think that we should, again, just by a mere majority of vote of Congress, we could increase the number at any time.
Mm-hmm. And FDR wanted, what, as many as 6 more justices?
He did, and he had the votes to get it. This is the one thing that history also shows, or American history. If you threaten these institutions, if you show them that you actually have the will and the clout to bring about institutional change that chips away at their foundations, they'll give in. So what happened in FDR's time was that every single New Deal act that he tried to implement, the Supreme Court, the conservative Supreme Court, would rule it's unconstitutional. So he mustered the votes to increase the number of members of the Supreme Court, and he had it. And that's when they gave in. And the last thing they wanted was to dilute their power. So they wanted to remain as 9. And so they started, lo and behold, allowing his legislation to go through and the New Deal plan to be realized.
Hmm. Well, let's have our own constitutional cafe this hour of the program and find out what our listeners think about both of these ideas. Should we, it wouldn't take a constitutional amendment. It would just take a majority vote of Congress. Why is it that we have 435 members of Congress when the framers of our country thought that one member of Congress for every 30,000 constituents would be a good thing? We have nowhere near that now. Otherwise, we would have thousands and thousands more members of Congress. And what about the idea of, I don't know where you might set it, is having nine on the Supreme Court a good idea, or do they decide such huge questions that determine the fate of the republic that there should be more wise voices and minds on that particular body? Would you up the number of Supreme Court justices? Why keep it at nine? All right. What do you think? Let's go to your phone calls momentarily. Here's how you reach us. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655 is our number. Our email is talk@wpr.org. You can always leave messages on Facebook. I love to read messages on Facebook, and it's a good way to keep the dialogue going. That's the Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter at @KDunnShow. Our guest this hour, we wrote a very, very interesting book, and the work that he's doing all over the country is very interesting. He has written a book, Constitution Cafe, Jefferson's Brew for a True Revolution. Christopher Phillips is the author. He is now Senior Education Fellow at the National Constitution Center, and he is an Ethics Fellow at Harvard. And he goes all over the country conducting these Constitution Cafes with Americans. What a good idea. To you in a moment. Phone lines are crowded, so leave messages on, you know, email, talk@WPR.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go to phone calls. What do you think of these ideas that our guest this hour has outlined? They're intriguing, aren't they? It would, when you think about what the country would be like if we implemented both these changes, it would be, I think, pretty dramatic. Let's start our calls with Kristen in Madison. Hi, Kristen.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Sure.
So I think that this is a fascinating topic, and I think that it's really a brilliant solution to the problems that our government is facing. But my question is, realistically, why would Congress want to make these changes? I think that there's enough perks for them to keep it small, and, you know, I'm not sure what kind of kickbacks they get or, you know, what the lobbyists offer them to vote a certain way. But I'm just wondering, like, what would Congress have to benefit? Like, what would be their motivating force to
change? Yeah, it's a good question. Why want to give up your power?
They wouldn't. That's the whole point. We have to, the only way that we can get them to is to create a circumstance in which, if they don't, there's going to be an even huger price to pay that they're going to have to pay. So, for instance, the last thing they want is a new constitutional convention that some wonderful people are trying to spearhead, such as Lawrence Lessig, who's trying to launch a constitutional convention to bring about an amendment for campaign finance reform. It's the last thing they want. So we would actually have to form grassroots movements in each congressional district and get them to commit, those who are running for congressional office or for reelection, to commit to supporting this idea, to actually be statesmen and women, and to recognize that they can't possibly heed the people's will and the kinds of congressional fiefdoms that they've carved out. This, you know, our nonprofit group, Democracy Cafe, if you go there at democracycafe.org, we invite you to write to us and volunteer to spearhead or support or be part of a group in your community to get Congress to do what they otherwise won't do and to get them to support at least one of these two congressional acts that would bring about dramatic change in our constitutional republic.
What is it, Democracy Cafe what, Christopher?
It's democracycafe.org.
.org.
Yes, and
right.
There's a section, if they scroll to the bottom, called Save Our Constitutional Republic. And these are our two proposed remedies for now. I suspect that others might pour over the Constitution and come across even more remedies.
Yeah.
That wouldn't require any sort of constitutional amendment.
Well, and last week it was the U.S. Senate considered this constitutional amendment allowing Congress and state legislators to limit the power of money in politics, which is wildly popular among Americans. It didn't pass, but people were on record as to what they thought about this.
Again, that's exactly right. These measures are wildly popular, and yet they're not doing a thing about it, and they never will unless they have to. That's exactly the problem, and as long as they can continue getting away with it, as long as we don't make them genuinely act in accordance with the will of the people, we'll only have a constitutional republic of a democratic variety on paper. But they've long since bent and twisted our laws, undoing the very democratic mechanisms which were meant to make our republic so vibrant and so representative of the people's will.
Ted in Eau Claire, hi.
Hello?
Yeah, hi, Ted.
Hi. Are you ready for my question?
Yes, sir, we are.
I'm sorry, first time calling.
Oh, it's okay.
You were talking about how the Senate hasn't changed since its inception. But living in Wisconsin, I thought, with our progressive history, didn't we change the way the Senate fundamentally behaved when we decided that the people should directly elect senators and send them to Washington instead of our state legislators electing senators and sending them to D.C.? I'd just like to discuss how that maybe changed the way we do democracy here in America.
Mm-hmm.
Can I ask you something? What changed?
Well, maybe I'm confused. It could be. I don't have a very good background in history, but
no, you
isn't
do.
It true
That's
that
exactly
the
right.
state legislator used to vote on who we'd send
That's
to
right.
Washington as senators?
Right.
Yes, they absolutely did. No, what I was asking was, have they? Do you think that the Senate, as a result, has become more active in representing the will of the people of their states, or do they pretty much do whatever they want to do?
Did it change the way business is done, do you think, Ted? Well, we'll have to.
Well, here's the thing. He brings up actually a very important point. The Senate, the members of the Senate, did not want to have an amendment passed that would have them directly elected by the people. They liked the backdoor politicking in which state legislatures chose mm-hmm. who the senators were going to be. That was the one and only time when there were enough states. 2/3 of the states were getting ready to launch a new constitutional convention. For the very reason that they wanted to have senators directly elected by the people of their states. What did the senators do? They quickly backed down. They backed down because once a constitutional convention or what's called an amendment convention is passed, even though they might be specifically charged with considering one amendment, in this case the amendment to have senators directly elected rather than chosen by state legislatures, Once the convention is called, they can enact and consider as many amendments as they want. And that's the last thing that the U.S. Senate wanted, because it could have changed the entire scaffolding for governance. It could have created a dramatically different system once that convention was called.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't want a convention. That's the last thing they want. And so I say all the power to all those who are trying to get a new convention launched. I think if they can ever show that they actually have 2/3 of the states calling for one, I think very quickly our members of Congress and our Supreme Court will be much more heedful to the people's will, because we'll be, chipping away at their foundations of this very unrepresentative system that they now are able to run with will and with abandon.
Thank you, Ted, very much for the call. He reminds me, Ted's remark, it was part of last night's Roosevelt program of when, I believe it was in Teddy's administration, that we started to get primaries in the country rather than the political parties determining who the candidates were going to be. We sort of take that for granted now, but that wasn't always the case. Heaven forbid we should decide who the candidate should be, right?
Heaven forbid. We
yeah,
wouldn't want that.
Really.
We're not smart enough, right?
No, we're not. Yeah. Sally in Middleton, hi.
Hello. Thanks for this opportunity, because I've had this question and no one seems to have an answer. The question is, for a representative court, which in part the Supreme Court is, among their many aspects, why are there only Catholics and Jews? Because Protestants and all their variety of thinking, they would add be representative of a large group of our population. Why has that slipped by? And anybody I've asked is just blank. They don't know that.
Yeah, I would be a little bit blank too about the why. All I'm suggesting is that let's say that Congress would just take a mere majority vote, allowed the president, or let's say every 4-year term, a president could select one more member of Congress. There would be no new amendment. I mean, of the Supreme Court, there would be no amendment required. So if we would just up the numbers of the Supreme Court by one for every 4-year term of a president, I think that we would see that we would have a Supreme Court that was more reflective of the populace as a whole.
Until you get, though, people are living longer and longer. It won't be that long that people will be on the court till they're 100, right? So you'd have a whole lot of members of the court. Maybe that wouldn't be bad.
Well, all the more reason to increase the numbers. I think that there's and if you look at some of the cases that are mentioned in Supreme Court rulings, they mention things that a lot of people aren't even aware of that come from a time when, our younger generation of voters can't even relate to. So continually increasing the number by one until we reach a certain number, we'll have a Supreme Court body that is much more in touch with the people. If you study the decisions of the Supreme Court as a whole, I think we'll find that they tend to be, that they'll tend to be much more reflective of the people's will if we since they're already activists from the bench in any regard, that if they actually do have members who are, at least some members who are much more current with the median age of the population.
We're asking this our two questions. We're looking at the Constitution and asking, would we have less big money influence in politics, a more representative democracy, if we, and this would just take a majority vote in Congress, if we did away with this public law freezing the number of members of the House at 435, which was passed for unsavory reasons, really, in 1912. And the second question is, in 1869, Congress set the court at its current number of 9. Why 9? Shouldn't we have more? Or maybe not. What do you think? Those are the questions on the table this hour of the program. And our guest is Christopher Phillips. Christopher wrote a bestseller, Constitution Cafe, Jefferson's Brew for a True Revolution. And he does these Constitution Cafes all over the country where important questions are asked, not frivolous questions, but important questions that govern the way that we live. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. Twitter is @KDunnShow. And Greg is next in Waukesha. Hi, Greg.
Hi, Kathleen. Hi, Christopher. Christopher, thanks for doing this. I'm actually going to a presentation tonight on constitutional law
here.
In Waukesha, and so this is great, preparation for that. Basically, what I'm wondering, though, Christopher, is I'm a big advocate for local and state, politics. In other words, if there's things to solve, we should work on solving them, on the more local level, the better. I like your theory on, more representation. I like, maybe more knocking on doors, more phone calls, better responses to, to things. But I assume you're talking at the federal government level. And I'm wondering what would happen with local and state politics. What are some of the repercussions that you see as far as states' rights, local rights, things like this, if this ever does happen. So, thank you.
Thank you for the call.
Yeah, it's a really good question. I suspect that Congress would be much more amenable to passing and considering and enacting legislation that was sort of brought from the bottom up instead of the top down form of governance that we have. So, in Wisconsin, there would be, many more congressional districts and many more opportunities to enact laws on the federal level that were reflective of what was going on at the state and local level. So it would be, I think there would be much more of an oscillation of healthy communication between the people and all the various branches of government at the local, state, and federal level if this came to pass.
Bill sends an email, Christopher. He's from Madison. He says, 1% who want to influence won't be that easily stifled by modifying the ratio of representation. Mm-hmm. He worries about the influence of money from the 1% and its effect on elections and says, well, yeah, that wouldn't change.
Well, you know, the world is a lot of what we make of it. So if we're looking at the world as it is right now, well, then it wouldn't change. But let's look 10 years, 20 years down the road when this really kicked in and was operating on all pistons. I imagine that we would have a kind of economy that was far different than the type we have now. I imagine that we would, my operating premise is that we would have much more economic equality as a result of increasing dramatically the number of members of Congress. Again, the influence of corporations would be greatly diminished. It wouldn't go away, but I think it would change the very nature of the kinds of corporations we have and the kinds of economies we have over the longer haul. So right now, this notion of the 1% having such extraordinary influence that it's rather depressing, and I know paralyzes many people from even attempting to act in the public sphere. I think that would be dramatically reduced over time. Can I guarantee it? No. But the only way we can know is if we actually follow through with something. And it's almost a no-brainer. I thought it was very boneheaded of Congress to freeze the number of members of Congress. I personally felt it was actually unconstitutional to do so. But at the very least, we can start trying to undo the damage and see what unfolds as a result.
Steve, I believe it is, from Eau Claire. Hello?
Yes.
Hi.
Yes, hello. So I was thinking, and I'd like to hear your guest comment on this, from a remark that I'd heard quite a while back from Richard Dreyfuss, an actor on something that I was watching. He said, my God, these guys couldn't even pass a civics course. And I'm thinking, could there be, if there was a new constitutional convention, could we put in there an educational plank where they would at least have to have certain basic knowledge in constitutional legalities and case law for the Supreme Court, you know, to know about how that works, to know about civics, to know about American government, to pass some sort of a basic governance course before you could run for office?
Well, you know, it's sort of a tricky thing when you start saying that people do have to let's say that we carry that over to the voter sphere, and we said that voters had to know certain things before they could vote. You know, it's a controversial thing. Now, it's not very, very good when the Speaker of the House, John Boehner, said that one of his favorite passages in the Constitution was the one that says all men are created equal. Now, that's from the Declaration of Independence. Now, at the opening of every session of Congress, they read the Constitution, so he obviously isn't listening. It would be nice if we had members of Congress and past presidents who did not seem to be very well versed in the Constitution. Our current president was a professor of constitutional law, so I'm assuming he's remarkably well versed, but that doesn't seem to prevent him from operating extra constitutionally, from doing things that the Constitution doesn't seem to give presidents the right to do, such as involve Americans in all kinds of incursions without Congress actually declaring war.
Well, I bet you're making this public now, but if a few months ago you had asked members of Congress, where do we come up with this 435, and do you have it within your power to change that, or what about 9 justices on the Supreme Court? Do you think maybe we should do more or less, and how would you change that? I don't know. I just am surmising that you'd be hard-pressed to get a whole majority of the Congress to understand what the background is on both of these issues.
I would be. I'd be hard-pressed to get a lot of people to.
Right.
Really.
Yeah.
So what do you do? You start by planting a seed, by floating an idea.
Mm-hmm.
Saying, here's my idea. What do
right.
you think of it?
Right.
There's some other really brilliant ideas out there, too. But let's get these ideas in the mix.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, especially at the outset, there are lots of naysayers, even among people who are sympathetic, but who believe the system can't change. But I think Americans deep down are rabble-rousers at heart. And so sometimes it just takes a spark here and there to get people to take action. I'm sort of issuing a call to
mm-hmm.
get people to actually insist that their members of Congress or those vying for elective office commit themselves to passing a law that would undo Public Law 62-5 so we can start upping the members of Congress again. And so there would be much more representative of the people, I would presume, over time.
You know, and I love the fact that you're putting these ideas out there, too. It's good. Steve, thanks for the call. Let's go to Karen in Kenosha. Hi.
Hello.
Hi, Karen.
Yes, I think it's a great idea on both of your ideas. But with this day of budget cuts, how are we going to pay for this? I'll take my call or answer off the air.
All right, Karen, thanks.
With the budget cuts, how would we pay
for the additional members?
I think that if we increase the number of members of Congress incrementally and incrementally reduce the number of unelected staffers that each congressperson has, it would pay for itself. But again, if we look at this over the longer haul and had members of Congress, this colorful, colorful, diverse array, this wonderfully cacophonous group of members of Congress who actually communicated with one another and bandied about some wonderfully experimental ideas, and were statesmen and women, I think that investment in and of itself would over time pay extraordinary dividends to every single American.
Thank you very much for your call. Jake in Hilbert. Hi, Jake.
Yes, good afternoon. I've been listening to the program, and I often wondered about this question. If two-thirds of the states actually call for a constitutional convention, and let's say they take up this We the People amendment that move to amend has been proposed for a long time now, and actually there is a House resolution that was passed in February of 2013, I believe. If that constitutional convention is called by two-thirds of the states, can that constitutional convention take up anything it wants to take up with regards to amending the Constitution, or are they only limited to what that original specific amendment that was passed by two-thirds of the states?
They would not be limited. It would open up a Pandora's box.
Oh.
So what I'm saying is that we need to threaten it, and we need to show that we have bite behind our threat. Because what I'm also saying is that our existing document, our existing Constitution, gives us all the means and mechanisms to bring out the fundamental change that is needed to get our constitutional republic back on track. But as history has shown, our members of Congress will not do anything unless the people themselves sort of crack the whip. And I think one of the best bargaining chips we have is to show that we actually have the numbers needed to have a constitutional convention. It would actually mitigate the need to go through with it if they do enact these two laws that would just require a mere majority vote to increase the numbers in Congress and in the Supreme Court. So I hope that those who are fighting the good fight and trying to get a constitutional convention launched keep moving forward. I hope that they show that they're slowly mustering the support of two-thirds of the state. But I would also hope that this would get members of Congress to heed a concurrent movement, a grassroots movement of people who are just getting them to commit to increasing their numbers in Congress and also increasing the numbers in the Supreme Court. They won't do it unless they feel like their very institution is going to unravel if they don't.
Christopher Phillips, our guest this hour, he's the author of Constitution Cafe, Jefferson's Brew for a True Revolution. He's been doing these Constitution Cafes all over the country. He's also a senior education fellow at the National Constitution Center, and he is an ethics fellow at Harvard University. A lot of people, when he does these Constitution Cafes, are concerned about campaign finance reform, corporate personhood, and as he has been studying the Constitution, which of course he does more than most of us, he found parts of it that wouldn't require a constitutional convention, but would change things fairly dramatically. They would just require a majority vote. He writes that James Madison was adamant that our representatives, in order to be truly representative, had to have districts that kept the size of their constituencies manageable. It was important as our nation's population grew and the physical size expanded. If the size of constituencies became unwieldy, our republic would become dysfunctional, he wrote in the Federalist Papers. It would never have occurred to the framers that Congress would employ democratic mechanisms to undo representatives, and just over a century ago, Congress did just that. Do we need more people in the House of Representatives? Congress could vote to say, okay, let's do it. And also, do we need more on the U.S. Supreme Court? What do you think? Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, email talk at WPR.org, Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, Twitter at K Dunn Show, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go back to phone calls. Anne in Cedar Grove is our next caller. Christopher, hi, Anne.
Hi, I think your ideas are good and show real promise for trying to reclaim our democracy. You've hit on several problems that I've seen for a long time is impeding that democracy, such as gerrymandering, the lobbyists, and corporate control of our politicians and campaign finance. And the other area that I wanted your opinion on was a re-election. And I've thought for a long time about the what the effect of eliminating re-election would be for some members of Congress or representatives, for example, or I guess maybe all of them, and potentially making the term limits longer, but then getting rid of this career politician idea. So that was my question, and I would appreciate your opinion.
Thanks, Ann.
Well, thank you so much. Arguably, these would require constitutional amendments, and Congress would not allow them even to go through the chambers, their chambers, much less be considered by the states. So I'm asking, in a sense, even though I know a lot of listeners are wondering what the odds of my own proposal is, that it's much easier to get them to do just a mere majority of vote than to vote for something that would require three-fourths, a supermajority, in other words. Now, I'm a dad, and I've got some young kids, and I don't want them to have to face the frustrations with our elected members of Congress and the direction that our country is taking. I want them to have branches of government that are actually following and adhering to the Constitution. And again, the legislative branch is meant to be, especially in the House, is meant to be the one that is closest to the people and that is meant to actually take their marching orders from the people. So I'm hoping that over the next 10 years, it might take quite some time. Hopefully there will be a groundswell as word spreads, but that maybe some people are willing to take those first steps and volunteer to start grassroots groups in their own congressional district and just get those running for office to make that commitment to do away with Public Law 62.5 that has frozen not only the members of Congress, but our republic. And I hope they'll come to democracycafe.org and let us know that they're going to at least try to fight the good fight.
Jared in Menominee Falls. Hi.
Hello. Good afternoon. I'm just curious if the current number of 435 is set by legislation, why can the Supreme Court not hear that legislation to be found unconstitutional? And if that's possible, wouldn't that be the easiest solution?
No.
I'll take my answer off the air.
Interesting question.
Well, just like I believe that it was never even questioned. So that would be an interesting move after 100 years to go back. Now, I have to say, though, the Supreme Court tends not to be very progressive in these things. They would probably consider this a well-set precedent. I know that when the Supreme Court, you know, for instance, there is absolutely nothing in the Constitution that says that once an amendment has proposed amendment has been gone through Congress to be considered by the states, that any sort of time limit is to be set. And yet, for instance, with the Equal Right Amendment, they have imposed an arbitrary time limit of 7 years. And when that was considered by those advocates for the Equal Rights Amendment, wanted that time limit done away with, and they argued before the Supreme Court to do away with it, they said that it wasn't unconstitutional. So again, the Supreme Court probably isn't going to be our most activist arm in undoing these things. I suspect that that branch of Congress, the legislative branch and that group in the House that is closest to us, is going to be the one who's going to be the most heedful and consider and changing this law.
Greg and Tilden, hi.
Good. Hi.
Hi.
Hey, I think we've got two ideas. One, we should consider repealing the Citizens United, and what about stricter limits on political groups like ALEC and all them evil groups like ALEC? All those evil groups like ALEC.
Did you get that, Christopher?
I didn't.
Let's just take it in the direction of what. Explain to me where we are with the constitutional amendment drive. Is it serious? Is it gaining momentum to undo Citizens United?
I believe it is serious, and I believe that it is gaining momentum. I saw Lawrence Lessig yesterday, who is leading Mayday.us. And he heads the Edmund J. Safra Center for Ethics, in which I'm a network fellow.
Mm.
I believe that they are making considerable headway. But I do believe that there need to be some other concurrent movements, too. As supportive as I am, at least in spirit, of that, I believe that the best route, honestly, is to threaten an amendment convention, but actually to threaten it as an instrumental means to get Congress to enact the laws that I'm suggesting that would just need to be enacted by majority vote.
Michael in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. I'm calling in. I'm very interested. I never heard anybody propose this kind of thing, and I'm very interested in this, what you're saying, because I've been emailing my representative for, you know, every month for the last 3+ years, and I get no responses, do anything that I'm asking them to do, and I think what I'm asking is pretty middle of the road. So, we need more representation that's actually representing us, and in Wisconsin, the best we can do is 5-4 Republicans now, you know, with the gerrymandering that happened. So I'm trying to formulate, you know, an idea, I mean, something, a question off of what you're saying. But.
Well, I think what you're saying is you're supportive of this whole idea. It would certainly be easier for representatives to stay in touch with the people they represent. There's no doubt about that, Christopher.
Well, I think that if we, the people, ever realize the influence that we can have, if we ever became assertive enough en masse, and we, the people as a whole, across the political spectrum, believe our government is woefully dysfunctional, so then the question becomes, well, what is the best remedy? Look, these are never perfect systems, but I do believe that our system is being subverted by the very people that are in these various branches and are meant to serve it. In the Lincoln-Douglas debate, Abraham Lincoln said, "The people of these United States are the rightful masters of both Congresses and courts, not to overthrow the Constitution, but to overthrow the men who pervert the Constitution."
Mm.
So that I believe the time has come, and if not now, when?
If not now, when? Thank you for reaching out to us. It was really a fascinating, and tons of phone calls, just so you know that there's a lot of interest in this topic, Christopher.
That's great.
DemocracyCafe.org is the place to go, DemocracyCafe.org. Christopher Phillips, our guest, and you also may want to read his book. It was out a couple of years ago, but it's really interesting. Constitution Cafe, Jefferson's Brew for a True Revolution. He has these Constitution Cafes all over the U.S., in addition to being a senior education fellow at the National Constitution Center and an ethics fellow at Harvard University. Thanks to Scott Myers and KP Whaley for doing on-air production, and thanks to KP for producing this really interesting show. News ahead, Roosevelt's next.